right, welcome back for part two of our two-part episode. Man, I'm always excited when we could kind of come back here and dive a little bit deeper, my guest gets to ask me even more questions here. So for those who missed last week, please go to rosskrause.com, rosskrause.com, to listen to part one of our episode. It'll be about 25 minutes, and then you'll be up to date. But without further ado, let's get into part two of our two-part episode today. I'm very excited for what we have to go over.
My guest today is Sophia. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Sophia.
All right. Hi, everyone. My name is Sophia. I live and work in Chicago, and I work as a digital marketer. In the past year, outside of this whole pandemic thing, I got engaged and moved into a house. So
very exciting.
I guess some good news, some good things happen. Otherwise, I spend my time watching too many Netflix shows, playing with my dog, learning to embroider, generally just sitting inside. My main money strategy, since this is a show about money, putting it out there, it's kind of a mix of aggressive saving and like periods of panic. That's how I'll describe it.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah, sounds familiar. Great. I'm looking forward to talking to you and hopefully feeling less panic after some of my questions. Or maybe we can share the panic.
That's what I'm hoping for.
So, I mean, maybe you're going to say this depends on the couple, but what percent would you say, or what range do you say, of your income should go to your own personal account versus a shared account?
Well, yeah, it does depend. One of it depends on if you have kids, right? So if you have kids.
So I don't have kids.
Right. Yes. So you don't have kids.
So we're me.
Right. So it's just you. So that would depend on a conversation. You know, you should talk to your fiance and go over, well, what are our shared goals together? Do we want to buy a house in the future? Do we want to go on a vacation in a few years? Are there things that we want to do together that we know are going to be us? And then you could start together saving towards that goal. That would be where to start. That wouldn't be all your income. That would be, you know, a portion of your savings. It could be a few hundred bucks a month based on.
Well, okay. Yeah. So what if, I think it's pretty common for a couple, for one person to make more.
Yeah.
A lot more, a little more, whatever. Would you say like everyone puts in $1,000 a month, or everyone puts in 50% a month?
Yeah.
Different for each person.
You got to do percentages. I wouldn't get too caught up. Listen, it's one person's going to make, even if both people are making a good amount of money, one person's always going to make more. Mm-hmm. Than the other. That's true for almost everyone. And I wouldn't get too caught up in, well, you know, I put in $1,000 a month and you put in 500, so I get, you know, 2/3 of the say of this. That would be, I wouldn't do that. I mean, that's where I say there has to be trust. I would say you also have to understand that you're trusting that you're going to be with this person and they're going to be using the money on stuff for us. So that's why you have to have a conversation and why you also don't put everything into start. But you know, if you have goals and stuff you want to save for, you know, I would put it in. And then maybe if you make more than your significant other and it's going for a vacation, you know, you should get to decide where you go, something like that. You know, just do it like that. But no, I wouldn't get too granular. I wouldn't get like keep track of who puts what in, because that also creates problems. You know, you're just gonna have to accept the fact that if you make more, you might put more in. And you know, you should have no problem, because it's the person you want to be with, right? And it should make you happy. And if it doesn't, I would say maybe I'm not the right person to speak to, but maybe you should talk to someone else about that. But from a financial point of view,
you're getting into some therapy over here.
Yeah, but I do that, by the way. I feel like especially when I work with couples, there is more therapist and that in my job than anything else, especially when they have kids. And especially when there's one working spouse and one who's not, and you never make it a competition, and you never keep track of that stuff, and you have an open dialogue, and you know, just knowing that the money is going towards us. And when you sign up for marriage, right, it's us. Mm-hmm. You have to give up a lot of things too. So have your own account and have stuff for you and buy the stuff you want. And, you know, also have something for the two of you as well. And like I said, start small. I wouldn't start with $1,000 a month. That's probably too much unless you're making a huge amount. You know, each start with a few hundred bucks and then slowly build up on that.
Okay. I guess that's a respectable answer.
You don't seem too impressed with that.
Well, I mean, any answer that's like, you have to have a conversation isn't a real answer. It's more of a guidance, which obviously,
yeah,
that's true, but it's like,
I could be there for you when you have the conversation. I'm happy to.
You're
but most
be the
people,
mediator?
Yes, most people, I do that for some people, to be honest. But most
really?
People, yeah, but I don't like to force myself in. I think you'd be good to do it on yourself. But some people need a mediator, especially when one has such vast differences in spending habits and earnings than the other, and they feel like they need a mediator. And it's not a bad thing, but that's why I'm saying I'm happy to be the mediator for you if you need someone like that. But usually it's best you two are going to know each other better than I do. That's why it's usually good to have your own conversation as well.
Yeah, and I don't think this is a topic that I haven't thought about too much in the past because we're so different. I think it's the opposite. Our spending is very similar and we both save a lot. So
that's
I'm
good.
Like, doesn't make sense if it's two accounts, one account, three accounts, whatever.
A lot of it, once again, is psychological and just good for the relationship. It's not necessarily a money thing, but they do weirdly go hand in hand. I tell you, it is better for the relationship when you have that cohesion financially, because I'm sure a relationship therapist should tell you to have cohesion with the rest of your relationship. So money also applies. It's just trickier because it's a little out of everyone's element and it's personal, right? I don't want to get there, but similar. I would apply the similar concepts to the rest of your relationship as you would for this, to be honest. You just might need someone to give you some actual money advice if that's out of your element. That's all.
Okay. I like that you're bringing therapy into this.
Yeah, perfect.
It's making me calm. Okay, my next question.
Yeah.
So stop me if you heard this one before, but there was an article online that was circulating maybe like 3 years ago now that was like, by the time you're 30, you need to save a year's worth of your income.
Right, I've seen
that. Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
And that article has been living rent-free in my mind. What does that include? Does that include just your 401k? Does it include your liquid savings? Does it include the gold that you bought in your bunker?
Yeah.
Like, is there any meat to it?
Yeah, so there is. And there's also some validity and some not to that. It's a guideline. So if you're making $100,000 a year and you're 30 and they say you should have $100,000 and you have 90, you're not screwed. You're not right. You're fine. Okay.
Yeah.
Because the younger you are, those are not huge numbers you need to have, but it does include your 401k. It would include the value of gold, right? Because technically if you had $10,000 of gold buried in the backyard, you could go get that, dig it up, go to a place wherever that buys gold and get that money right away, right? I wouldn't include a value of your home in it. That would be one thing I wouldn't include, because unless you have like multiple homes and you could sell one, it's not like you're just gonna be like, okay, I'm gonna sell my home and get the money. Well, okay, first of all, where are you gonna live? And second of all, it doesn't work like that. You have to like find someone to buy it. It's a long process. It's not immediately liquid. But otherwise, cash, in your bank, investments, your 401k, you know, anything that might be valuable. Maybe you have some stuff that, I mean, if you have something valuable that you're never going to sell, then that doesn't count. But if you have like a, you know, some nice car or some piece of art that you think you could sell that's worth something, yeah, I would throw that in. But it is just a guide, because if you make $150,000, at 30 versus $50,000, it's going to say if both of them have $50,000 saved up, one of them's going to be doing right on goal and the other one's going to be really behind. So that doesn't necessarily apply to everyone, because, well, also where do you live? right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to adjust it for, are you in a place that has a high cost of living with higher income? You know, if you're making $50,000 and you have $50,000 saved up, but you live in downtown Chicago, you know, that might not be great because things are expensive and the wages are higher. If you make $100,000 and you have $50,000 saved up and you're in, you know, rural Montana where things are cheaper, I'm going to say that person's a lot better off and is a lot closer to their goal. With you being that young, I wouldn't get too concerned about that. Once you hit the 50s and 60s, then those numbers become a lot more important. And then those numbers become a lot more real and visible. Right now, it's just something eating in the back of your mind. I would use it as motivation, but don't beat yourself up if you're not there, okay? Because almost very few people in their 20s and 30s have investable assets and of what they're making as a salary, to be fair, unless you're making very little money or unless you're making a crap load of money, right, and then are unemployed. It's, you know, it's just most of the people are going to be behind that goal, to be honest, especially young age, because they're still paying for debt. They're still living their 20 life, which isn't about saving for retirement. It's about having fun and
I can't believe you would say that.
Well, I'm not that person. I've saved very well. I'm a great client of myself. But yeah, I have probably 2 times my income, but I'm a really good client. I'm a really good saver and I'm a professional and I've been doing this for a while. But most people are not like that. They're living their life and they should be. You know, I don't want you to sacrifice too much of now so you could have 1 times your salary saved. So then you have to sit at home and do nothing, right? That's bad advice. You got to have fun. It's a balance, right? And then make sure that you just are putting enough away so you can get to that goal.
Okay. What I got from that is move to Montana.
Well, know what you want and know.
Montana.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's actually a very beautiful state. I drove through there from Chicago when I moved here to Seattle and it was really nice. But know that if you have lofty goals and want to live a lavish lifestyle, then you better have more saved up than if you're simple and if you don't need as much. And if you don't need a lot of lavish things and your lifestyle could be more basic, then adjust that, you know, maybe it's half a year salary at 30 as opposed to a few years, right? It just all depends on your lifestyle. That's why I don't like those. You can't get too much specific advice on the internet because it's not meant for you. It's meant for the 100 millions of people who are like you, who have your same age and demographic and income, but everyone's different. So it really doesn't apply to you as much as you think, just so you know.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Where were you 3 years ago when I was panicking about this, Ross?
I was here.
Okay, that's what I mean.
I'm always here for free advice.
Okay, are we at our last question?
We are at question number 5. Let's
okay.
do it. Yeah.
Here we go. So, over the past few years, my New Year's resolution has pretty consistently been to be more green.
Ooh.
I've heard of the term green investing. Green investment. What does that mean?
I'm really glad you asked that because I've been waiting to talk about it on this forever.
Oh.
So green investing, or as we call in the industry, socially responsible investing, has really picked up popularity in the last 5 or 10 years. So it used to mean something very different than it means now. So I'll tell you what it used to mean. It used to mean, Ross, I don't really want to have money in companies that, you know, sell tobacco, or I'm against, you know, firearms. I don't want to have that. Or I'm very religious. I have to have these certain types of companies that follow these religious codes. And they would just pick those companies and that's it. So you really wouldn't be actively investing in socially responsible stuff. You would just be excluding things that you didn't necessarily want to invest in. It's different now. Now they're actually going out of their way to find companies that are engaging in causes and engaging in You know, women's leadership funds are popular, where you invest in funds and companies that have women either on the board, women who are being paid equally, women who have a direct say in the leadership of the company. You're investing in companies that are actually proactively finding ways to clean the environment, to have, you know, cleaner sources of fuel. You're investing in companies that maybe don't have a lot of involvement in other countries that might be, you know, exploiting people for the diamond mines, or just, you know, various other stuff like that, right? So it's much more active, and they have to follow these rules. And as a society, we've also moved to do business with companies that we morally agree with, right? Whatever those morals may be. A lot of people aren't going to go to this company or that company or support this company or that because of whatever their stances are, right? And as a result, that affects the dollar line. Some companies that might not be doing things as morally as others, you're going to see that on the bottom line when younger people boycott eating there or buying their clothes or whatever's going on. And as a result, you've actually seen a lot of socially responsible investments and funds do slightly better in the last few years than their regular counterparts. It's too small of a sample size. It's only been a few years, so I don't know if that's a trend or just a blip or, you know, just a weird coincidence. But I do know that this is a very important trend, and I don't think this is going away. And I think it's important that you should get to shop at wherever you want and do business with whoever you want. You should also feel the same way with investing, right? You shouldn't feel like you have to invest in a cause you don't believe in to make money. I believe that, and I think a lot of people believe that now. The problem is those don't exist in 401ks, right? That there's no socially responsible funds in 401ks. You have to do it on your own. You have to do research or work with, you know, a professional like myself to find those funds and do it. And it takes money, right? You have to have some money to do it. So unfortunately, socially responsible investing isn't feasible for everyone, but I think it will be. And I think it's very important. And I think there's going to be a lot more options out there in the future. And I think it's very possible that those funds and those investments might do better than their counterparts in going forward.
Do they have to have some sort of like certificate that this company is blah, blah?
Yeah, there's some law or rule. I wish I could remember it now. That would have been the one time where the question beforehand, I could have looked that up for you. So whoever's listening to this, look that up. But there's a rule. There's like a 5% rule, but you can't have more than 5% in something, something, something. I just don't know exactly. But yes, there are. There are rules and regulations to be considered a socially responsible fund. And like I said, some of them are more active and some of them are more passive as well. So there's a lot more options out there, and they're at larger companies too, which is interesting. You could read about the fund. You know, I have clients who we have climate change funds. You know, we have carbon free emission funds. They did very well in 2020. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. The funds did very well. So because of the world's also going in that way, right? I mean, we're looking at different types of energy. We're always progressing and moving forward. And usually that's good for those types of funds. So yeah, I would say if you're passionate about that, my big takeaway from this is it's very possible to do. It's very possible to do right now. And it's very possible to do without sacrificing investment returns. People used to think I could be socially responsible, but I won't earn as much money. And I have to dispel the myth that that's not true anymore. It might take some time and research, or you might have to work with, you know, a professional on this. But if that's something you feel passionate about, you shouldn't have to settle for investments in funds that maybe don't fit your moral compass, to be honest. And I think you should be active in that if that's something you're passionate about.
So how much effort is it to find these funds and companies?
Well, it's if you're good at investing and you're a DIYer and you do this already on your own, like not the 401k, but like if you have some investment accounts on your own and you've done it, and you're passionate about it, it's not that much more difficult. But for most people who are just like, I'm in my 401k and I know a little bit, and this isn't something I'm passionate about, you have to work with someone like me. And the reason why is this has to be really personally tailored to you, right? You can't just call a 1-800 number and say, I want to be socially responsible. And then they'll just give you some stuff that may or may not be aligned to you. You have to say, Ross, I'm passionate about, you know, this specific cause, and I want to be in right. And that's why. So a lot of it is work with a professional, tell them exactly what your causes are and where you want to be. And then that person could find those funds based on you. There might not be a million options out there, but it requires a little bit more research, a little bit more give and take, and a little bit more personal interaction to get there, especially if you don't know what you should be filtering through, because you know, you're not a professional. You have a job, you do other things. So that's why it's probably better to work with someone like me for that specific space, because they're not all equal. Socially responsible investing is not all the same. It's very different.
That's actually really interesting.
Thank you.
I had no idea about any of this.
Yeah. It's a great wave that we're going to. I was almost going to call this the green seat or the green zone, but green, I was going to think people would think I was talking about the environment instead of money. Green, the color money, mm-hmm. But now I'm talking about both. So maybe this is the green episode of the money seat. But yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I've been waiting for someone to ask me because I'm so excited about this stuff. And I really hope I could find more people who are as excited as me so I can help them. Because I've only had one person who's ever really come to me and been active about this.
That's because people don't know.
Because people don't know, exactly. So I'm hoping after this episode, people are going to flock to socially responsible investing. I think it's good for everyone. The more money that goes into these, the more the companies feel like they're on the right cause.
The more the market changes.
Right, and the more the market changes, exactly. Because usually that's where businesses make their change, right? All right. A lot of stuff they do is for PR, but if they're suffering financially, that's when they might change their goal. I mean, let's just be honest. Money drives almost everything. So if you see that happen, that's could really bring on some real change as well, especially as younger people become more involved in the market and they have mm-hmm. they have more about causes, right? Everyone, they don't just buy this shirt or this item of clothing or this food. They have a story behind it, right? Everyone, so why not have that with investing as well? And if you're passionate about it, you should do it. So, yeah.
Cool.
Oh, that was it.
Those are my five.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Sophia.
How do you grade me and my questions?
I think they were great questions. I think hopefully people listen to the podcast. That's a whole other thing. I got to get listeners. But if we do get listeners, I think they'll be intrigued by this and definitely talk about things that, like you said, you didn't even know before. That was my goal of this, is to bring awareness and educate people who weren't aware of a lot of this before. Because if you have this question, there's a good chance thousands and millions of people listening are also going to have the same question as well. That's very common. So, man, thanks for joining me, Sophia, on the money seat. Thanks for taking your time. I know this is a little later in the day, and hopefully you had a good time. And thanks, everyone, for joining us. And we'll see you for another episode of the money seat.
Thanks, Ross. Bye.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professionals prior to making a decision. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Economic forecasts set forth may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful.